we want a cool perk?
Yes. Does anyone know what the perks are? I know Eric does, and I'm sure some of you are familiar with
it. Anybody not know what a perg is? Perg stands for Public Interest Research Arm. So this is the Ontario Public Interest Research
Arm. One of the, we get into talking about it, one of the organizations on campus that you might, you know, it has a bunch of shell organizations too. It's a left-wing activist organization that's funded by student fees. Is it refundable at Laurier?
Yes.
Yeah, usually refundable, but often in you know, Woodruff said before, in a negative billing sense. So you can get your money back from this organization if you dislike what the chapter does at your campus. But they often, there's a time limitation. You have to do the beginning of the term within 3 weeks, between the hours of 12 and 2, and then they don't tell you where to get the money back. So they can sit there and...
You have to fill out an explanation of why you hate social justice or something.
Yeah. So, OPERG is that, it started actually at the University of Waterloo after a talk on campus by Ralph Nader. Some of you know Ralph Nader. That gives you sort of an inclination into what the organization's like. He delivered a lecture on campus. It was the early 1970s. Things were going on at Waterloo. Must have been a hotbed of socialism back then. So a petition drive happened, and they instated a fee on the fee statement of Waterloo, and the rest is sort of history. Then PERGs started popping up at other campuses throughout Ontario. They're all members of the umbrella group called OPERG, which doesn't actually really exist. It's not an office, although they all contribute money to this provincial organization, tens of thousands of dollars to it, actually. There are PERGs on, I think, most of the campuses in Ontario. Generally funded through a fee on the fee statement, again, refundable. Depends on, it depends on your campus, but I think for the most part, it's a refundable fee. And I always say that though nonpartisan and purportedly non-ideological, PERGs often fund and support causes that some of us might disagree with, put it mildly, or find important otherwise. They frequently take sides on the Israel-Palestinian question, often not on the side of democracy, I would say.
They've been on foreign policy, they clearly tend to favor those groups which conservatives not normally align themselves with. They also tend to support a lot of more radical environmental eco-justice causes, identity politics, anything that involves gender identity, female, I don't want to say all gay and lesbian issues, but I mean, it essentially the sort of the full kaleidoscope of issues that you associate with the left, you'll probably find there's an organization on your campus that the PERG is contributing to support.
Yeah,
and just to interrupt, on a more tangible level, like we love to, at least in our school and other schools I've talked to, they like bring a big speaker every year, and someone who costs an amount of money that no other group can match on campus. This year they brought Mark Barlow here, last year Romeo Blair. People are costing in excess of $50,000 to match campus. And no other group can match that or bring up anyone who's going to get some kind of coverage and contract.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, they're not bringing the most non-ideological, moderate people to campus. They're bringing, like, Norman Finkelstein, who's a scholar for the United States. He's a noted anti-Semite, and they brought him to campus, and it caused this hoopla, and they sponsored this, and, you know, the Jewish Students Association was having an absolute conniption. This is right back in 02 or 03 when this happened. And they did, because it's fine to bring you want sort of debate about those issues on campus. That's fine. He can say whatever he wants. I support his freedom of speech, but you're using essentially a mandatory student fee to fund someone to spout out anti-Semitic views, which I find absolutely abhorrent.
They brought, when I was at Waterloo, they brought Warren Churchill, who's this supposedly native, he's not even native, I think I'm wrong with that, he's a faux native American, who came, this was just after 9/11, this was maybe 2 months after 9/11, and he came onto campus and basically gave a speech about all the people in those buildings deserve to die because they were parts of the system, and he called them little Eichmanns, that's what he called them.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbelievable to be in this room. This is only a couple months after 9/11, and you could tell from the reaction of the people in the room, like, the people who were sitting further back were kind of aghast at this, like, oh my god, and then the closer you get to the front were, like, the hardcore lefties who were like, yes, absolutely, you know, down with America, and you're just... And this is these are the kind of folks that they bring on campus. And as Ryan says, you know, the conservatives' objection to the PERG is, you know, we obviously disagree with a lot of the causes they support. But the fact that they exist and they bring speakers isn't the problem. It's that they alone have this unique access to resources that other groups don't have. And that, you know, they'll claim, well, it's refundable, but it isn't really. I mean, if they were really sincere about that, they would simply solicit for donations or raise the money themselves, in which case, we wouldn't have any, I mean, I still wouldn't go to their events, but we wouldn't have any problem with them existing on campus. So you know, don't confuse the fact that they're left wing. That's not the reason that campus conservatives tend to fight PERGs. The reason we fight them is the nature of the way they receive money. That's the big problem.
And a lot of what they do is sort of unbeknownst to the average student. Average student is going to class and is paying $4.75 a term or whatever it is and has no idea what they're doing until something controversial happens and it's all over the campus press. And another issue that you know that we would be concerned about as conservatives is the fact that they're institutionalized. They often have offices, they're well funded, again, not necessarily problematic in and of itself, but they use their institutional strength to decry conservative causes. When we were at Waterloo, I'll tell you a little bit about how we approached them, the three different approaches we took to PERG in our time there. Widrick alluded to the petition campaign earlier, and we'll talk about that after. They would often use their column in the campus newspaper just to slam Mike Harris, just for that, like, and nothing in particular that had gone on that day, that week in the life of the conservative government in Ontario, are just slamming him. He's anti-woman, anti-education, and they're using their space in a campus newspaper, again, which is funded by student fees as well, to rail against and to pick a fight with the conservatives on campus, using their institutional strength.
And it's not, again, we don't like the content of their editorial, but this organization had a guaranteed column in the student paper every week, and no other organization had that. I mean, but WPERG had this, Waterloo was called WPERG. They had this space, like a quarter page every week, where they could just write whatever they want. And it could, you know, I can't think of any other group that had that access. Even student government, even executive, would have to ask for a special, like, op-ed. But not PERG, they just get their spot in there every week automatically.
And then just administratively, they're usually governed by board of directors, which are student volunteers. Now, this is important to know that if you're concerned about something that the PERG is doing on your campus, and you're perhaps considering putting someone on the board of directors, it's really difficult to get someone on because there are built-in institutional safeguards against like moderate and conservative students getting involved.
Yeah.
You know, like two-year terms, annual general meetings that you don't hear about, et cetera. But it is a student organization. Most of the PERGs, as I understand, have full-time staff members. I know at Waterloo they have two. I suspect LS PERG.
Yeah,
LS PERG does as well.
Yeah.
You know, these individuals are, you know, making a fair amount of money. I mean, you know, for a student organization, we need to pay two individuals $35,000-$40,000 a year to essentially man a library, right? And this gives you an idea of the scope, the amount of money that they take in. It was always hard for us to get access to the budgetary documents, even though we're members of the PERG. You know, we're talking about a, you know, $100,000 budget here, larger in some cases.
It's really difficult to take over a PERG because, as Ryan said, they stagger, right? So let's say there's a board of directors that's got 24 people. They elect them for a three-year term, so they elect eight, like, every year. So even if you stack out one meeting and surprise them one year, you've only got one-third, and then they're ready the next year. So they've sort of built it in so that you can't take it. Now, we know that's the case at Waterloo. I don't know what it's like at other campuses, so look into it. If it's possible to, in one fell swoop, you know, take over the board of directors, I think that would be pretty impressive, and you'd be a hero to the conservative movement if you pull that off. But
next thing to say.
Yeah, and to get somebody on there, I mean, they're very much it's a closed shop, right? It's very much all the people who are affiliated with the PERG and can volunteer with the PERG, they all know each other, right? Like, so if you just show up as, you know, Joe Schmo one day, they're gonna wonder something's gone. It is pretty much the campus equivalent of like sending an undercover agent into a hostile country, because you need somebody who was not at all attached to the conservative movement and who could plausibly come across as sounding like somebody who sympathized with these causes. And I've never seen it happen. It would be a pretty, like, a long-term, pretty funny undertaking to do. But
and if you can do it, hey, kudos.
I think there's better ways to fight them. So.
And there are chapters located at many of the campuses. Not all of them, but many. You can see them up there.
So there's none at Western?
Oh, did I put Laurier up there? No, there's one at Laurier, too. I don't think there's one.
Western.
You don't know Western.
Not Western.
My logo apparently didn't. So we've identified some of the issues, but we'll get into greater detail about some of the issues that a conservative student on campus might have with PERGs. Accountability issues, we already alluded to that. And it's very difficult to find out how they're spending their money. I would be even if I wasn't conservative, I'd still be concerned that this organization is taking money from the fee statement. What is it doing with it? Why can't I, as a member, if you pay the fee, you're a member of the organization with voting rights, the ability to use resources, et cetera, why can't I get that information?
You're not be able to challenge out with Freedom of Information Act or something?
No, well, there are ways to do it. I mean, you don't want to call the lawyers and tell them you want to get access to a webpage document. But yeah, I've heard there are ways to do it. But you should be able to do it. If you're a member board, you should be able to walk in and say, can I see your budget, please?
Yeah.
Right? Polite about it, respectful, et cetera. And some people just find that the environment is unwelcoming. I mean, you know, the question that you bring up, this is a political issue, but I think it's apt, is that on the question of pro-life and pro-choice, a pro-life student wouldn't feel welcome, and generally doesn't feel welcome in a PERG office. Irrespective of where you are on that issue, it's because they take one perspective, even though students take two perspectives, right? There's a group of students that are pro-life on campus, and always a group of students that are pro-choice, right? And it's a place where it's one perspective, funded by everyone's money.
And they're this is a difficult one to play off, though, because if you start complaining, people just pin it on you being a conservative, right? Like, oh, you're only mad because you're a conservative. And if you had your way, if you were running the PERG, it would just be the opposite. It would be your issues, right? And so it's the answer then is, well, I don't think it should be either issue that gets funded, right? I'm fine with people speaking about whatever they want to speak about, but not on my dime. The accountability thing is a lot easier to sell to people, right? Because that's not a partisan issue, as you say. If you explain to people that, look, I don't care what they do, it's just that nobody knows how they're doing it. They should open their books. They should let the light, like the 1,000 points of light or whatever, right, you know, shine on them and make sure that we can see what they're doing. But you got to be careful that you don't come across someone like a grumpy conservative because you're not getting money and they are. Because it's not as if they're not used to us attacking them. I mean, they've had it happen how many times, so that they've got their fallback answers, which is, no, not at all, you know, we're totally nonpartisan, and then they'll demonstrate that they haven't donated any money to any organization, even though they support groups which then in turn donate, so they're just one removed. And they'll also point out to they'll often be like a token, like, libertarian group or objectivist group, you know, that'll have, like, you know, one event that they had 3 years ago, and so they'll say, see, look, we support those events too, right? So they're used to this, so they know what's coming. And at the end of the day, I mean, they'll just wear you out. I mean, they'll just wait you out. They can. I mean, they're institutionalized. They're already there. They're like, we've been here since 1972, and we've provided all these things since then, and they know you're only going to be bugging them because they're only here for a year or two. And so they'll just wear you down. That's often the way they can go.
And then they'll say, and by the way, you're a conservative, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
None of your criticisms matter. And you'll see that in the student newspaper that, you know, you get involved in that. They spend tens of thousands of dollars on causes that some, and I maybe contend majority of students I don't know about or would oppose, they take divisive stance on questions that we've already alluded to. Again, that's fine.
Those are the two big ones, though, and those are, you know,
which really, you know, get people cranked up, especially the Israel-Palestinian issue, right, where you have the Jewish Students Association having a fit about anti-Semites that W. Ferg is bringing to campus. And then again, as I said before, they provide institutional opposition, whether it's for common, the newspaper, or just their volunteers running around to conservative causes. Not just partisan conservative causes, but causes on campus about which we'd be concerned. If there's a student government that's particularly left-wing, particularly activist, they'll be the ones who are vocally supporting them. They'll be helping out and campaigning for people who oppose you.
Yeah.
If you're running for student government.
As if we didn't have enough institutional opponents as it was, right? But, you know, this is one that, at least in theory, can be defeated, right, in the long run.
And again, as we said before, this is not an issue of free, and you can never let it devolve into an issue of free speech. When we were dealing in, you know, the many different encounters we had with PERG back in our days at Waterloo, they would always say, you are opposed to free speech and you're conservative, but you're opposed to free speech, and then they tell everyone you're conservative. And that's not the issue. You have to stay away from that. That's not the problem. The issue is accountability. The point is, you create your spin about the real issue is accountability. Nothing else. Not an ideological bone the conservatives are picking. We're just concerned. We're concerned about using mandatory fees to fund causes that not everyone supports. So, how do you address PERG? PERG is doing something, LS PERG is doing something on your campus. It's a cause that, you know, you and your friends at the Tory Club dislike, or maybe there's an allied group on campus that isn't conservative, that's conservative-minded, sympathetic, and they've done something in that particular year that bothers you. What are you going to do about it? And there are plenty of different approaches. Our first encounter with PERG as the Tory Club of Waterloo, when I was there, I mean, they've been dealing with PERG for years. You go back through, like, campus media arc, it's always the Tories and W. PERG. Every 2 years, there was some sort of
kerfuffle. It's like a tradition.
Something happened. You know, the Tories got riled up about something that the PERG did, and then the PERG was just, and it was all over the media. But they had there were riots in Seattle, but it was about a decade ago, I guess. I'm dating myself. The World Trade Organization was meeting there, and we had found out that PERG had paid people to attend, and some of these individuals were involved in a riot, right? And we said, this is ridiculous. And we're just using this as an issue to attack PERG. And that's what you got to grasp on, is something that's salient in the eyes of the campus community and the broader community. We thought, okay, well, we'll send a few letters to the newspaper, just drawing attention to this organization, drawing attention to the fact that it's subsidizing people to promote violence, and see what happened. So three of us from the club all signed with our executive titles from the club. I was the membership director, whatever, at the time. And then this launched a violent reaction the next week in the campus media. All the letters to the editor, I think a large majority of them were from, they pulled out the troops, right? They were average students, didn't sign as WPIRG volunteers. They were all persons who were activists in the organization, and they fought back ad hominem attack. This is the conservatives, they do this all the time. But what we did successfully is draw attention to their cause. They were concerned enough that they invited us to a meeting in their offices for a re-education session, I like to call it, right? Three of us, and we thought, and it seemed as if there was this whole coterie of people on campus that was concerned about. In reality, it's three Tories having a beer at the bomb shelter pub one night, saying, "What are we going to do about these people?" And so they invited us to their office, and we were trying, "You just don't understand what we're all about." "I do understand. I oppose you." "Sorry, you don't need to tell me that." But so we went in there, and we kind of agreed to disagree at that point. And that was one approach, drawing attention to them. We got the club's name out there. Like, the Tories seemed like this. You know, we didn't have a large membership at the time. This is when I was just getting started in the club, actually. I think we maybe had, you know, 5-10 people show up on pub nights. But it seemed like the Tories were this force on campus. WPIRG with its $200,000 budget versus the young Tories. They must be this monolithic organization. These three guys in the pub saying, "What are we going to do?" But it made the Tories, you know, sometimes you can't attach the Tory name to it. And you have to be sensitive to that. I'm sure, you know, Eric reflects upon that in greater detail. For something like that, it didn't matter, right? We're conservatives. We had a problem with PERG, no big deal. But if it's a really controversial issue, you sometimes need to be wary about that. Mobilizing opposition to PERG around a particular issue. So, Norman Finkelstein comes to campus. Find your, ally groups. The Jewish Students Association is stuck up about it. Get them involved. And what are you going to do? Figure out a campaign. Maybe it's just letter writing. Maybe it's drawing attention. Maybe it's boycotting the event and showing PERG, demonstrating that PERG is a more radical organization.
Your ally in that is obvious, right? Like, so if it's an anti-Semite who's coming, it's probably going to be the Jewish students, right? If it's a radical feminist who's opposed to, very pro-choice, it's going to be the pro-life people on campus. Like, this, it'll be obvious based on the issue who your allies are going to be.
And some of the things that have worked in the past in terms of, this, we'll talk about the referendum campaign and how to deal with them in terms of getting them off the fee statement in a second. But in the interim, what can you do? What I like to call fee reclamation events. This is something that the U of T Tories used to do. They used to get 10 or 15 people together. They're all club members. They'd invite the campus media out, and they all go to the OPERG office at U of T during that time of the year when you can get your refund, and they'd all demand a refund. They'd have a photographer there from the campus newspaper saying, "Oh, students are getting their money back," and they make a story about it. And so this demonstrated a number of things that showed that, students are actually opposed to this organization. B, you can get your money back. So other students knew about that you can get your money back based on this. And again, it was the club got an opportunity to get into the campus press. And whether you want to use the club as sort of the front or your campus coalition for liberty or just a bunch of average students, that's a decision that you'll make on your own campus. But it's something to do, and it drains. If enough people do it, that's funds that they're not using to subsidize causes that you oppose.
And that's good just to annoy the hell out of them. Because they know every year there's going to be a handful of people come, but this just pisses them off, and it's just a nice little way to just stick it back to them. I remember, I think it was the year after I left, one of my successors at Waterloo, what he did was the office for the PERG was in the same building as like food court on campus, so he would like hang out by the food place. People were going in to get food. He'd be like, "How would you like to get that for free?" Like, "Well, if you go up to the office today, you can get your..." So he sent 20 or 30 people upstairs just by letting them know, "Oh yeah, you can get your $4.75 right now. You don't have to pay for your lunch, you just go get it." And so, they get this parade of people that one day.
And again, whatever works in your campus, but it's something to think about. And then counter-protest. That for every year, they on Buy Nothing Day, they get together with the Adbusters group, and they tell you to not participate in capitalism. Take this as an opportunity to celebrate the free market, to celebrate capitalism, and erect like a free trade, you know, coffee station beside the Buy Nothing Day table, right? It sticks in their craw. You're drawing attention to a cause about which you care. I think everyone in this room is a supporter of a free and fair marketplace, right? Talk about it. Celebrate capitalism. Capitalism is not something to be reviled. It's something to be celebrated. And it just bothers them. How could you do this? This is a day when we're not supposed to be consumers. Be a consumer. Sell free trade coffee on Buy Something Day.
That's the classic example. And if you've ever dealt with the bureaucrats people, they do this perfectly, right? They'll find a group that's selling something, like something organic or not just localized source of spring water or something in a bottle. And then what the free traders or the conservatives will do is they'll set up a table right next to them selling something similar but at like half the price or one third the price, right? And then so they'll get all the business, obviously. And then naturally what will happen is the fair trade people will start to get upset and try to stop people from buying your stuff. And you're like, this is exactly the problem. You're not letting the market work. You're not letting people choose. So that's a fun one to do. What was the other, the ill-fated march for the war in Iraq, which attracted a total of 8 people. That was the year they were in government, so he couldn't be in it, although they did provide me with the cardboard to make the posters. This was right when the war in Iraq was being launched, and I got, it was 6 or 8 people, and we marched up University Ave with a bullhorn from the student union run by conservatives, and the placards, and we were supporting this invasion. And so, you know, it's just this ridiculous spectacle of these students. But you wouldn't believe when we were driving down the street. I mean, half the people were screaming obscenities at us, but a lot of people were honking their horns and, like, you know, old ladies sticking their hand out the window. Yeah, we'll get them. And we got the local CTV affiliate came to film us. The Record sent a reporter. 570 News Center reporter and the campus. So we had 4 media covering 8 people on this event, right?
That's just a good point about the ability of conservatives to attract media on campus, because there's this view that, like, conservatives are atypical students. So when you have like some sort of counter protest or someone supporting something that's typically something a university student would oppose, all you need to do is send out a press release, pretend the Campus Coalition for Liberty is a large organization that it is, or the Tory Club might only have 10.
Yeah, we had branches at 5 campuses. We had 5 people, yeah. One at each of 5
campuses. And we're all Tories.
We had branches at, yeah.
One time, this is sort of slightly off topic but relevant situation, I attended law school in Halifax at Dalhousie, and George W. Bush was coming to town. I was still kind of worked up. This is 2004. Still kind of worked up. 9/11 worked up like 3 years later. I worked up about the war. And there was all of these activist groups under the sun came. There was an 8,000 person just protesting his appearance in town to thank Haligonians for the support they paid when 9/11 happened. All the flights were diverted to Halifax Airport. People were staying. Like, it was totally benign, apolitical trip. And you have everyone under the sun protest. So I thought, I want to get some media play out of this. So I founded a chapter of the Campus Coalition for Liberty. It was a guy with a computer and a press release. I sent out this press release saying that we were going to, not counter protest, but we were going to appear at the to show our support to George W. Bush at the demonstration. Anyways, I got 5 minutes before the 6 o'clock news on CBC Radio. I can't believe I got that. Like, 3 newspapers covered it. It was just me and a press release. Why? Because the position I was taking was so uncommon for a student. It's like, all students are anti-American, anti-war. And I was here supporting George W. Bush.
I remember you sent me that, and I listened to the CBC radio clip, and you could tell the person that was interviewing him, it was almost as if like they were interviewing like an alien. So, let me get this straight. This is your position, and you're comfortable doing this? And he pulled it off perfectly, but you could tell that they viewed it as this curious anomaly. It's like, oh, conservatives are only supposed to be old people. I mean, you can't be a young conservative. That doesn't seem to make sense.
So use that to your advantage, Kevin.
So what's the wisdom of just, like, instead of necessarily fighting them, getting our own nonprofit corporation that receives student fees, and then just having our own student funding to fight them? Or in the alternative, if you can get student government, which some places you can, because OPIRC is a nonprofit and not a club or a charity, just amending the student funding rules so that, like, in order to receive funding, you must be a club or a charity. And then, like, bam, they're just not eligible to receive fees.
Yeah, the problem with that is that they view themselves as an exception. I mean, and to be fair,
a lot of people in PERG really do believe they're nonpartisan. Like, they honestly do think that they're not being left-wing. It's just that when you look at their track record and the types of people that are attracted to it, they are. So that some of them have this genuine belief that they're not left-wing, when the facts, the evidence just shows that they aren't. With respect to getting our own, I mean, I just think that flies in the face of really what we believe in, right? Like, I don't believe that we should be milking money out of students either. And just because they're doing it for their causes, I don't think that we should then start doing the same thing that they are. That's my take.
Yeah. Couldn't you go, like, instead of just fighting Pergans, what seems to be an endless circle, a vicious circle, couldn't you just go to the student government, get a guy in there, and try to, again, make legislation like the feds in Waterloo, get a couple senators to go and try to bring up the issue? Like, now would be a perfect time. Students would be against the funding because we're in an economic recession. Not a lot of people have the money. And even something like 475, a lot, like, as you say, a lot of people don't even know the organization exists. I know a lot of people, they've never heard of it. I never heard of it until Eugene told me. And I did not know I had 475 going to PERG. I think PERG can be defeated, not through just conservative things like media events. I think it's something that you need to bring up. You need to publicize PERG, that all students are putting 475, publicize their issues. Because when I walked in there, they were against everything. Like, they had a pamphlet that said, "Are you a meat eater? Cut your meat consumption in half."
It's for them. They'll come and say, "Are you against public interest issues?" This is a campus. This is an institution of higher learning. It's a place for open debate and discussion. Are you against an organization that promotes these things? You are against free speech and open discussion, sir. Like, that's what they'll say.
It doesn't matter what they say, though. If you go up to the student government, you're ahead of them.
Well, they don't have control over
that.
But
I think that's the thing. Maybe. Emphasize that they're an entirely, as Kevin says, an entirely separately incorporated entity.
But that's the thing, the student government gets to pick who's eligible to get student fees, don't they?
Like, it depends on the rules.
What is WPIRG? Are they, like,
They exist, they're incorporated, right? So they're a charitable organization. I shouldn't say that, because they don't have the charity number. It's a not-for-profit organization, it's incorporated, it's a separate legal entity. Right? To simply, it's hard to make it go away. Now, the issue, we're getting into this, how did it deal with them in terms of the fee statement, getting them off the fee statement, which should be the ultimate objective.
Yeah, we're not talking about killing them. We're talking about changing the way they do their business,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's like the NDP,
yeah,
right?
And that's,
I'm not trying to put them out of business. I just don't think that if imagine it's the NDP instead of her getting this automatic money, right?
Same thing.
But that's the example, I don't want them to go away. I just don't want them to get extra resources other than they're entitled to, right? And that's really what we're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of, bringing it. They brought out Ralph Nader this year again, and it shocked me that Ralph Nader was brought out, considering he called Obama the left-wing savior of the world. What do you call him? On national news, on CNN, he called Obama Toby. He said he was Toby, which is basically calling him a slave to the white man. He said it on national news, and then PERG invites him over to speak to thousands of people at Waterloo with my money. I just can't believe it.
But you think, like, we get worked up about it because we're attuned to these issues and we're aware. But think of, like, how you can, as you say quite rightly, the average student would think where their money's being. They don't know that it's being spent. They don't know what the hell WPIRG is or OPIRG is. But as soon as they find out, they get freaked out about it. And they get upset and they want to do something about it. These are ways you can draw attention to PERG and have a bit of fun and recruit people to the cause. But the ultimate objective, as Woodard quite rightly says, is to change the way they're funded. That's the issue. They're going to exist on campus, just like any number of activist groups exist, through voluntary donations, through, like, the tiny club subsidy that every club gets, and they'd be fine. But PERG treats itself as special.
The equation is flipped for them, right? Like, most organizations succeed based on the number of people that are interested in it and are passionate about it and get involved in it, right? Like, a conservative club is only as strong as many people get involved in it and do things for them. The PERG is the opposite. They flourish on apathy because they automatically get money, right? And if people don't know about them, that's good for them because they just keep getting the money and nobody says anything.
Yeah, that's what
I mean. Well, what I don't understand is they're a charity, right? That's what you're saying?
They're not for profit.
Allowed to function that way.
Yeah.
But then how is it that they're allowed to just get money without people knowing? How is that allowed?
Well,
if the student government if student government has no authority over it, then wouldn't the faculty?
The university does. How it happened at Waterloo, and again, I think it's different every campus. At Waterloo, you can have a fee, it's stated on the fee statement, if there's a, the university, ultimately the university gets to decide, and frankly, the students technically have no say, and the university can just impose fees. What's generally the practice at Waterloo, and I think it's similar elsewhere, is that a student movement can arise, there would have to be a referendum petition, depending on the referendum rules. What happened was there was a petition to put it on the fee statement. I don't know if there was actually a referendum, but that was presented to the Board of Governors of the university, and then it got instated on the fee statement, and it's been there ever since. How it would get removed, the university wouldn't remove it unless there was a referendum, which is organized through the student government, clear question, done, and then you would go to the Board of Governors and say, remove this from the fee statement. It wouldn't destroy it as an organization, it still legally exists.
Would that not be a better way to go about?
Oh yeah, we're getting into that. Oh. Yeah, that's kind of, this is like, why?
Another good way to do it is, they've only got, 2 weeks where you can go claim that money back?
Not even that long, I don't think so.
Well, even if it's a week, whatever it is, have somebody stand outside every entrance door as people are walking in.
Fires.
Yeah, definitely.
Dan? Couple of things. One thing is, I don't know how it is with other schools, but our school, Per Group also ends up, they sign a contract with the student union. So even if you, like, let's say right now on the election on Thursday, we had an off-day referendum question, even if we passed it, we would not end it for a couple of years yet because the contract is still signed. And then one of the things is when we're talking, I don't know if you're going to get into tactics next year or what, but one of the things, the problem is that they all have like high forms that are used. They're not public forms that are easily found. They're hidden.
Because if people, you don't give people access to information that you know is ultimately going to harm your existence, right? So why would you? Exactly. We had the first set of approaches. What's worked at other campuses, drawing attention to them, which is useful in and of itself, especially depending on how difficult it is at your school to organize a referendum campaign, to get one called. The second approach we took was the next year, when we had a few conservatives on the student council of Waterloo, like partisan conservatives and then like-minded students. One of the conservative club members, who's the president at the time, he brought a motion to council to call a referendum, and at Waterloo council can call a referendum on anything. Didn't have the petition support. He went out the day of the council meeting, got 30 signatures, but it wasn't enough to automatically trigger a referendum, like we were talking before when Woodrow did it.
One step further each time, so we're hoping eventually keep doing that.
So what he got, so we lobbied councillors the entire few weeks before the meeting. They knew it was coming up. Any councillor could bring a motion on an issue like that, and council can decide to call a referendum. And so we're working the phones, working the email, working everything, trying to get councillors to vote for this referendum. And then the issue was not, WPIRG showed up with all the volunteers in the meeting, and they made it about WPIRG. But the spin that we put on it for other councillors and for the general public at campus, this is just, we want to consult with students on an issue on which students haven't been consulted since the early 1970s. It's an important issue. It's clearly controversial because there are two sides to this debate. Why not resolve that with a referendum to determine whether this fee should be on the fee statement or not? How could you disagree with that? And after one of the most vicious council meetings I ever saw, it failed on a tie vote. So because a bunch of councillors wanted to block a referendum, why you would not want to go to your constituents on an issue is beyond me, and how you can justify that. And we were berating the other council for doing it because they saw this. The reason why they didn't want a referendum is they saw it as threatening WPIRG.
Yeah, and that's you know that with a lot of these left-wing groups is that they. That when you play the populist card and say, look, if you're so relevant and everything you do is so popular, what are you afraid of? So we'll have a referendum. The students will say, oh, goodness, no, I love everything WPIRG does, and then vote you back in a landslide, right? And the only reason that they would be afraid is that they were, oh, my God, what if the students realize that we've been spending $4 of their money every year for the last 35 years, and they haven't seen anything for it, right? So
something to look at your campus if you're concerned about the issue is are the referendum rules? Are there special rules? Can you bring a petition? Which is a great way, of course, to gain support for your cause, find allies in other contexts, but organizing around this issue. Do you need a petition? Can you automatically trigger a referendum to get them off the fee statement? You have to explore every university's student government has slightly different rules for running a referendum. And I'm saying the student government would run the referendum. PIRG is not a part of the student government, but they would ultimately
be the arbiters of whether it's on the newspaper.
Well, find out what those rules are, and in some cases, that's actually a pre-issue for you to worry about. So let's say there are no rules. You could the year before, say you had a 3-year plan. You know, the next year, you could work without even mentioning anything with PERG, getting a referendum process in place which says that, you know, if you are able to collect 3% of all the signatures of student body, that you can trigger a referendum on any. And very few people in the abstract would oppose them, because they'd say, oh, that's a great idea. Anytime there's an issue that's pressing to students, they could you know, mobilize grassroots and then bring, and then a couple years later, use it to bring forward an issue of, you know, one that matters.
And again, it's not, as you say, we talk about the 4-year plan and 2-year plan here. These are things that you want to think about. If you're serious with doing it, a lot of the times we did it, and sort of in retrospect, we could have done it differently. We just showed up at council and decided without any petition support. Had we done what Woodruff did, he'll describe what he did next, with 1,400 signatures, and said, you call a referendum, or we're going to force you to call one because we're going to get 10 more signatures of automatic trigger. Then you can force the hand of the student government. And we just tried to do it under the radar, you know, because, you know, we didn't want to run a petition campaign, frankly, and we didn't get the referendum call at the end of the day. Then, finally, talk about the petition. So how we actually...
Yeah, well, we came up with that brainchild 2 years later that, based on previous experience about our predecessor who brought the motion forward to council, we thought, okay, well, we need more ammunition this time. And so we looked up the referendum rule and thought, okay, we calculated the number and then thought, well, if we meet this number, they'll have to do it or we'll force them to do it, right? And what ended up happening was we got the numbers, which is surprisingly easy to do. People will sign almost anything. I mean, you would be surprised what people will sign if you put it in front of them, as long as you frame it in benign terms. So we got, and I'm not at all under the illusion that these 1,500 people really care that much about PERG one way or the other, but I put it in front of them and it sounded okay, so they signed it. And so as I described that process where I showed up once and they wouldn't let me in because I wasn't on council, so I came back the next week on council. But I'm on council, I am now. And what happened there was this created the uprising for PERG that you described. The next meeting, they all showed up and they were pleading and begging and
crying.
And so we didn't, but we still didn't have the support. And I say we because, you know, even though he was on council,
I was the neutral.
They were of course neutral, and me as the Tory president was, even though it was all going on the same behind closed door. And it actually worked out well because it looked like different groups of stakeholders, right? Like it was like I'm the outsider coming in. And then you guys were just the responsible student government, and we had like other members of council, like a guy that you'd appointed to council who got speaking rights, but he wasn't an elected member, just as another voice at the table, right? So it made it look like there were all kinds of different corners, when in fact we were all on the same team. So I guess what had happened is we didn't have enough support on council to put it through, so they sent it off to a committee to look into, and then the committee came back with a bunch of recommendations, which were basically half measures, which included things like, you know, they'll have to advertise more clearly how to get your refunds, and they'll have to have education campaigns and stuff. And they were going to, implement this, and we had enough votes on council to block it, I believe, exactly by one vote. So it ended up dying, and nothing happened because, now what was the reason that the referendum wasn't actually triggered? I can't remember. I think it was the timing of the year. It was too late in the year. I think it was like March or something like that. So we just didn't have time anymore to have a referendum. But then, 2 years later, do you want to talk about this one? Do you know what happened with this one?
I think you know more than I do.
Someone learning from my experience and the experience before went out and got a pile of signatures enough to trigger it, actually went to council and triggered it, so the referendum was on, and then conveniently they were accused of violating some campaign rules, so the referendum got called off. And so as you can see, each time we get a little bit further in the process. But I mean, I think if it was actually to go to a referendum, there would be a fair chance of it passing, unless they set a super majority threshold or something. But I you know, there's hope, in other words, that it will happen.
When you're doing it, you know, you learn from experience. One of the things that we didn't anticipate through every time we tried this was that there were other fees in the fee statement, you know, for your art student society.
That was the problem.
And so what happened was the people involved in those organizations saw that the whole changing the way that these organizations are funded would be a threat to their existence, and it was bringing out allies that really shouldn't have frankly come out. So it's dealing with those, making W
or the old Perg, excuse me, a special case and selling it as a special case. It's different. It is a political organization. Sometimes you have to. You want to make it about the accountability and how it's funded, but sometimes you can't get away from the fact they are special. Because you don't want to deny funding to the Arts Student Union, you know?
Yeah.
That's not the issue.
And the newspaper, for example. Like, the newspaper was another organization that gets the refundable fee. So, I mean, that's terrible because they're the media that's reporting on this PERG stuff. So they suddenly find themselves lumped into PERG's corner. That was the mistake, now that I recall, that we made, is that we were very sloppy in our language. Too bad we went to law school after all this. We had all the language tightened up nicely. But we ended up creating all these enemies that we didn't have to. And you can get around that because, as I mentioned, just last year, a group that was a nonpartisan group, as far as I know, although there were some conservatives helping, they targeted the radio station and only the radio station, and they succeeded. Because, I mean, they pushed the referendum, won the referendum, and the funding was lost to the radio station. Because they isolated that group and didn't give them all these other allies to fight their battle for them. So that's something to remember, is make sure that you've lined it up correctly. Otherwise, you're going to end up fighting all these groups that you want on your side.
And we talked about before, creating shell organizations. This is useful in a number of ways. And I don't think we as conservatives do it enough on campus. Just whether you want to deal with the PERG, you're probably going to have to do it in a nonpartisan way, frankly, especially if you're organizing a referendum campaign, whether it's a Campus Coalition for Liberty, whether it's concerned students for accountable fees or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Something with a catchy
app. I'm just going to ask you about that. Obviously people are going to realize what they are, right? I mean, the organizations are. So what about the Alpha Campus Media getting all of that and like going with it, or other organizations?
Like, if you have a diverse group of people, and I'm saying, you know, alliance building is so important, you need to think outside of the conservative box. If you're initiating a referendum campaign or dealing with PERG, go and find your allies. Make the group not conservative in the sense that not everyone is a member of the Conservative Party. Young liberals will help you out. And they're sitting, as I always say, they're some of your strongest allies on student issues.
Right. What was that? What's that acronym group that for the Zimbabwe? The CRA.
I don't know.
It was this acronym called CRAZY. It was like Campus Radicals Against Zimbabwe. Yes, or something crazy. It was, they were a great shell group.
Yeah.
But feel free to use Campus Coalition for Liberty.
Yeah, that's ours. So we had the logo and everything.
Yeah,
great. It was like five people. We got press releases on everything.
Let us know, and you could use it now and be like established 2002. I mean,
yeah,
it's been around for a few years.
So it's
and one thing I want to mention about shell organizations is we talk about it a little bit.
Yes.
Crazy exclamation mark. We joke about these shell organizations, and some people might think, well, isn't that a little bit disingenuous? I mean, aren't you just inflating your numbers? Isn't that kind of underhanded and sneaky and stuff? And my answer to that is no, not really, because that's exactly what the left does. I mean, and they do it very, very well. Do you really think that when you have, you know, these 20 groups that go to march, you know, for whatever X issue down the street, that it's really composed of 20 different groups of people? No, it's the same group of people that are just cross-pollinating in all the organizations. And it's the same thing that we need to do, because it leaves the impression that you have a lot more support than you do. And all we're trying to do is even the odds. I mean, I'm not a zealot. I'm not trying to wipe out the left on campus. I just want a level playing field. I want people who might be inclined to be conservative to not feel uncomfortable about the fact that they want to talk about their position.
Crazy.
Crazy.
And this has been a theme today. I mean, we don't have to rehash it. You can't win any campaign on campus, whether it's dealing with PERG, dealing with Canadian Federation students, or dealing with student government campaign, with only the off the club. You use all of these things as opportunities for recruitment. Don't get me wrong. Part of the objective here is to bring people into the party. That's a good thing. And finding people who otherwise wouldn't come out to a club event because they're concerned about capital P political, you get them involved in an issue, they realize the conservatives on campus are actually, you know, a cool bunch of people. They do interesting things on campus, and then they want to get involved, right? But sometimes it takes that you need to organize around an issue to get them involved. But you can't win a campaign just thinking, there's 20 members of the Aka Club, we're going to go out and it's going to be a closed shop and we're going to run our own campaign. And then you get part of the problem where you're seen as just a bunch of conservatives, which is not a problem. I have no issue with that. But you want to be seen as a diverse coalition of students representing diverse interests, right? Have different people on board. Know that no campaign can be won with just the Aka membership. And then what are some groups on campus that you think we haven't talked about yet that you know might be sympathetic to, you know, a PERG campaign or sympathetic to helping you out with a student government campaign?
Crazy Vegetarian Club.
Crazy Vegetarian Club, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that they would be too, but maybe, right? But what, like some other organizations on campus?
Business students.
Economics students, excuse me. Political Science Students Association. Anything else at your campus?
Ella, out of the legal studies.
Yeah, there you go. There's probably a bunch in there.
And really look for groups that might be jealous of what OPERG gets, right? If there are groups that are like the Young Conservatives on campus, you know, they sort of say, hey, you know, I don't really have anything against OPERG, but well, why do they get free money and I don't, right? I think it should be level playing field. That's how you pitch it. You know, and that's great. If you have a club director, you just look up, you know, the president of the chess club and be like, hey, how come you don't get money? Isn't it fair wouldn't it be fair if you all did? You know, and you build allies that way.
Well, yeah, the only problem I have with that kind of connection is, I don't know how it is on other campuses, but on ours, whenever that kind of argument's been used, it's just been that then everyone gets funded and just ends up getting totally kind of control. Like this year, like the big thing was the Green Sea in the referendum. And it's because some of the green groups were fighting, they weren't getting funded, like the campus clubs and some others. So what we have now we have $250,000 annually for the green office.
How huge is the fee?
$10.
Really?
No way.
And it's mandatory, right?
It's going to be mandatory with no option.
Well, again, you can use, like, before, the big issue among Canadians and students was environmentalism. That's the reason that got passed. But now, people always think of their wallets first, and we've seen environmentalism go down and economics go up due to the current economic climate. So you just use that to your advantage.
But the problem is that you lose a tactical advantage because they can throw these things together, and there's no campaign. There's no money for no campaign. If you don't have a registered no campaign, you can't run no campaign. Get the scrutineers, you get no anything. You can challenge every one of your ballots and make it okay.
Well, and this is the thing more generally. Whenever a referendum is happening to impose a fee, there's no reason why students like us, students sympathetic to our cause, shouldn't be organizing that no to the fee campaign. Sometimes these things fly under the radar. People are too busy and don't want to get involved. You're preoccupied with other things. It should always be, you want two sides to every story? And anytime, it's such an easy sell. The students will say, no, do you want your tuition to go up? Do you oppose tuition increases? Because I do too. I have to be conservative, join the club. But you frame it as, it's the student government wants to increase your tuition. And there should always be an effective no campaign to increase fees. It should usually be organized by people like that. A bit about messaging, we talked about communications, get out the vote. I mean, it's similar. There's no hard and fast rule with dealing with the PERG. Largely because the rules are so different on each campus. For example, Queens has all of the fees, the non-mandatory fees, the non-mandatory fees and the fees, they would go to referendum every few years. So there's always an opportunity, at least once during your four-year tenure as an undergrad, to campaign, right? I guess the PERG there goes up for review every few years, right? Know your rules. Think about it 2 years in advance. Don't think about it 2 weeks before the referendum is supposed to be called and you're thinking about it. Getting out the vote, I mean, the strategy is the same. It largely depends on the rules, largely depends on the dynamic of the campus. We talked a bit about messaging. Anything else there, Greg?
Do you have more bullets?
No. I was talking because I don't have any bullets. In any event, are there any questions about PERG? Anything that we discussed? Anything you want us to elaborate upon?
One other thing.
Yeah.
There are ways that you can exploit PERG, as we were talking about, to set up, like this Campus Coalition for Liberty, I believe on some campuses they actually got money from PERG. So, you know, the next best thing to defeating PERG and cutting out their funding is making sure some of their funding actually does go to non-left-wing causes. So if you have, and I mean, I've seen multiple times, I think remember Graham Byrne did it on campus, he set up an Objectivist club, like an Ayn Rand club, he set up a Libertarian club, and so they will fund some of those events. I mean, they'll never fund them to the same degree they do others, but it's worth a try, and it's worth, if anything, I know that it, during the time that they had them set up with the PERG here, it sort of, I think, made the PERG feel a little
give them a false sense of security, because they're like, oh, well, you know, the conservatives are getting money from us now, so there's no way that they'll ever try anything, and then I trotted out the petition the next year. What a dick, eh? It's worth it, and they are, as I say, some of them, they can't help themselves. They honestly, their view of the political spectrum is from like the center to the far left, so they think they're truly representing like all legitimate viewpoints. But it is worth a try to get some money from them to represent some right-wing conservative thought.
And this is the point when, you know, when Aaron was doing the petition campaign, which I knew nothing about, printing them in friggin' my office, you know, in the student government. Of course I knew about it. Of course we were behind it. I couldn't take a public position on that issue because although I wasn't running for re-election, this was in the second, like the, you know, 3 months before the end of my mandate. That's sort of the picking your battles. I would have liked to have made Oprah the issue of my tenure on the executive, but we had a few, you know, tons of other things to do, and we didn't want to spoil it for other conservatives. Woodruff, who had no constituency, aside from after he got appointed to council, he still didn't care, but his constituency was his idea, right? But our constituency was students. We were very hesitant to write, like, stick our necks out, because we didn't want to be seen. Look what happens when the Tories get into power. It happened only once. It hasn't happened to that extent since, and we just go after Oprah. So there's a way to do it, but you have to be sensible if you're in student government to pick your battle, because, you know, no other Tory, if we had made them an issue, no Tory would ever get elected to student government there.
So the lesson generally about today, conservatives can and do win on campus, despite the stereotype that campuses are hotbeds of left-wing activism. Do remember, it's what I like to say, the Mike Harris lesson. All of these people running around the streets in 1995 protesting, it was as if the whole province, a million man march downtown Toronto, you know, I'm exaggerating, but tens of thousands of people out. And you would think that the whole province opposed this guy. How did he even get elected? And then I think his approach was just bulldoze everything, bulldoze the opposition. I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. I have a platform, and to hell with the consequences, to hell with the to hell with the people on the street. And he got reelected in 1999. Why? Because there's a silent majority of people who didn't care too much about politics, who were really, really, really upset. People were going around and opposing lower taxes and opposing, you know, an end to deficit spending. It's similar on a campus. There's a lot of students who don't care, who might care, might get upset about an increased fee, but that's the target. Those are people that are going to end up supporting you because you're not involved in some sort of radical organization. You're not involved in OPER. These are the people that will come out and support you if you can just message them and get them out.
Yeah, they're not, I mean, these people aren't going to, they're not going to lie awake at night in bed tossing and turning over the student fee, right? They might not be as passionate about it as you are, but they might vote if it comes up, right? They're not going to scream from the rooftop, but they'll be there. And you talk about, like the Harris example, and I mean, this might be before some of your time, but you know, after he was elected, I remember that there was that march on Queen's Park, and literally there were 100,000 people in front of Queen's Park. Like, it was a massive, massive, massive protest. It was, I think, with the teachers' unions, I think. It was 97. And if you looked at that, I mean, you would just think, you know, it was kind of like the protests are against Bush. It was massive, massive protest. And then he wins the next election with a bigger majority. Right. So if you just if you'd been only paying attention to that picture, if you'd only looked at the photographs in the newspaper and then watched the news on TV, you would have thought that you were in this tiny minority who supported this guy. But you see him in the ballot box, it really shows up. And on campus, I'm not going to go that far. I will say that being on campus is probably going to be the most left-wing environment you'll be in for the rest of your life, unless you move to like Trinity Spadina or something, or downtown Montreal. I don't know. But it'll get more conservative from there on. And that's one of the reasons that you should get involved with student government and with other like-minded conservatives on your campus and off, because it reminds you that there are a lot of other people out there that think like you do, and that you're not some bizarre anomaly. And that in fact, 20 years, a lot of your friends back in university who used to be leftists will probably be closer to your position now, once they've had to pay taxes for a couple decades.
And take advantage of the fact that, you know, as the slide says, that you guys involved, everyone's been involved in the campaign before. It might be presumptuous. Has everyone been involved in the campaign at some point? Off campus? Talking about a real campaign. Everyone has, to some degree, volunteered for the party. You guys have actual campaign experience. A lot of people, even the student government types, the ones who are, you know, from the first day at university, they're getting involved in student government. They got elected to council their first year, been on council for 4 years. A lot of those people aren't necessarily involved in partisan politics, and they don't know about messaging, they don't know about get out, they don't know about the things that you guys are exposed to on a regular basis whenever we have to campaign for the legislature or for parliament. So use that experience. And I think when we ran our campaign, I always like to think it was far more sophisticated than any of our predecessors. We were IDing vote. We were pulling out vote. We were doing things that we learned from our involvement in politics. And I think it helped.
We take those lessons and apply them on campus, right? Like, we all want to be idealistic and romantic about how, you know, it's going to be the Obama effect, and it's just going to be the speech and the passion, and it's going to motivate everyone. But at the end of the day, I don't want to rain on people's parade and say that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, you should be passionate and work your ass off and stuff, but a lot of it is mechanical stuff. I mean, getting out the vote and tracking your vote is, like, boring stuff, writing down a list of names and checking it off and scrutineering and things like this. It's all very boring and mechanical, but at the end of the day, I mean, it makes the difference. I'm convinced that we wouldn't have won here. I mean, 17 votes, I don't need to sell that too hard to too many people that things like identifying your vote, getting out your vote, that makes a huge, huge difference.
And remember, as you mentioned before, on campus, think of the dichotomy as moderate versus socialist. Not liberal Tory, not New Democrat conservative, moderate versus socialist. It's like a city council, right? There are the people who oppose tax increases, the people who are concerned about balanced budgets, and everyone else who usually control the city council, right, especially in Toronto, and to a lesser extent elsewhere. Keep that in mind. Keep in mind that your target group, as we've discussed before, is moderate, regular students who will come out and support your cause as long as you find them.
Yeah, you're not going to find any conservative that's going to admonish you and be like, wow, you really sold out by not being a hardcore right winger when you're running for student government. Like, that's not going to happen. So don't. I know that some of us that are in politics for deeply principled, philosophical reason, have a hard time doing that. But as a practical matter of politics, you have to pick your battles, and you have to sometimes give way of lesser things to win the bigger picture.
And even if, you know, whether you're running candidates for student government, you're getting involved in a campaign, or you're running a referendum campaign against OPERG, or doing something active, every single time you're involved in a campaign, hones your political skills for when it really matters, right? It matters at campus to a certain degree. It mattered a lot to me running for student government. But that wasn't the apex of my professional life. It's something that I did that was fun.
For some people it is.
Yeah, these are the career.
Don't let it be, right? You'll see a lot of these student, like being the president of the student union, it's like that's the last thing they ever did of note their life. Don't let that be the high note, right? And that's the other reason to take heart that if you don't succeed, right? Like if I'd gone home and cried because I lost my vice president education run, I mean, I don't think I'd be where I am today, but everything worked out for me fine, even though I didn't win, so.
And but take it as an opportunity, even if you're unsuccessful, that's another opportunity when you're political skills for what it matters, right? And sometimes you don't win, but you can't win unless you think in advance. You can't win unless you're alliance building early. Start thinking about it. Sit down at your club meetings and say, okay, is this something we want to do? We want to run candidates for office? Okay, talk to the first years of club. Say, what's the plan? How do we want to do it, right? They can, you know, you have this continuity in a Tory club where you have, you cover eight years of university life with that group there, right? The first years will be there 4 years after you, right? Think about where you have that opportunity to structure your Tory club or your campus and use it. Any questions? We covered sort of a lot of things.
Did you strain any of your relations with the student union when you campaigned against PERG? Because like they pretty much control everything that you do in terms of setting up events, and even if you want to buy stuff, even if you want to raise the money yourself.
When we were going after PERG, I was involved in student government while we were doing sort of anti-PERG stuff, like the three different things that we did. It was never harmful. I mean, I got some flack from people on students' count. I mean, when we tried to, you know, pull the referendum wall over our side, trying to call it, I pissed off the Tories because they knew it was the Tories doing it, right? And all the Tory councillors were all voting the same way and all had the same speaking points during. It was really hilarious, but it was so transparent. But you have to do what you have to do. We had a game, but so it upset individuals. But I don't think as a practical matter, it prevented us from doing anything. I don't think, whether like in our partisan capacity or our capacity is just like people were involved in like eight different clubs that are not conservative.
Yeah, it doesn't have to strain your relationship. And like, this may explain why he won and I didn't. Because that he took a much more, he was much more diplomatic. I was just a dick. Like, I didn't care. And part of it was because, I mean, he knew what he wanted to do from the beginning when he showed up at Waterloo, you could see he was building. I, as I said, sort of did it as a last minute. I decided driving to school that I was going to run against the guy that he beat last time just because I didn't want him to be a claim.
Right.
And I was pretty much balls to the wall. And I made a lot of benefits. I'm very polarizing figure on campus because of that. But that was a choice I made, and I didn't have anything to lose from it because I wasn't from the establishment, right? He was the establishment candidate. He played his cards properly and won, right? I was the outsider, so I had to gamble, and I gambled, and I didn't win. But, you know, as I said, it was a lot closer than I thought, so I don't really regret it.
And you were surprised to, you know, talking to, again, not conservatives, when a polarizing issue like OPERC funding comes up, you'd be surprised at how, like, people come up to you and say, you know, I haven't really said anything about OPERC in the past. And they'll identify some like arcane issue that they're really concerned about. And so they just sometimes when you're identified with an issue that's somewhat polarized, people come to you. And that's an opportunity to I didn't make too many enemies on council because there are a bunch of councilors who showed up afterwards and said to me and Dan, we're initiating this referendum motion, to say, hey, we should have done this 2 years ago. And these are non-conservatives. These are just like regular student types who just didn't like the PERG because the PERG is anything but a regular student's organization.
Anyone else? Good? Ready for coffee? Because I am. All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Ryan and Aaron, for